What's happening on the big screen and the small? What to watch with CJ Johnson.
Joining us for a look this week at films big and small, on screens large and small, is CJ Johnson. CJ, welcome back to Nightlife.
Thank you. Very glad to be here and very glad to be reporting on a movie that I went and saw in a cinema yesterday, which was very enjoyable.
Wow, that's quite something, isn't it? Yes. Well, that's right. Well, cinemas have opened up.
So in New South Wales, cinemas opened up on Monday, October 11th.
Of course, so, and elsewhere in Australia, they've always been open. So, yeah, it's we're slowly getting there, aren't we?
We're slowly getting there, but it was very, very nice to go to a cinema. Absolutely. It was terrific.
Yeah. All right. Three things. Then a movie that you probably saw was this film about the Port Arthur business with, it's called Nitram. It's the killer's name spelled backwards. It's been a highly controversial project, this, and many people thought it shouldn't be made at all. And you'd have to respect that view, I guess, as well. The director, Justin Kurzel, had some success with it. The film won an award at Cannes, including the Best Actor Award for its lead actor, Caleb Landry-Jones. Anyway, it tells the story of the killer at Port Arthur. We don't name him here on the program and never will. But and in that sense, I think in the film he doesn't get named either. It has, as I say, had quite a bit of reaction both for and against here, with people saying it's a beautifully made movie, and others saying, well, yes, but what was, why was it made? And it's in a sense going to glorify in some way the person who did it. I haven't seen the movie, but you have. What did you make of it?
Yeah, well, and it's worth spending most of our time on this one because it's a really interesting project for all of the reasons you just mentioned. We won't, as you say, name the shooter. The movie doesn't name the shooter. It's not, that's kind of not the point. As you say,
What is the point, I suppose? This is the real question here. What was the point of this movie?
Well, first up, it should be said that, of course, if the idea of seeing a movie about the shooter at Port Arthur repels you, of course, don't see it. You know, absolutely. I completely respect the fact that there will be people who don't want to see the movie, and that is absolutely fair enough. Don't go see the movie. I'm not going to say that just because it's a good movie, you should go see it. Of course, you shouldn't if you don't want to. That makes perfect sense. This is a very niche movie because it is inherently upsetting material, but it's not upsetting for the ways that one might imagine. So let's just say that. Absolutely, don't feel compelled. Absolutely, it's everyone's right not to see this movie. And so the question then is, despite, you know, regardless or not of whether it's well made, and let me say now, and I'll say why in a few minutes, it is incredibly well made. It is a very well crafted, well acted movie. Is there a point? Is there a reason it exists? And so for about the first third, even about half, I was wondering if maybe there wasn't. By the end, I was absolutely sure there was. Because what this movie, Nitram, is a thorough, methodical, detailed, unsensational, and very sincere examination of mental illness. And it is also a quietly powerful anti-gun plea for common sense. Essentially, it looks at the last, I guess, couple of years, two or three years of that person's life before that person's event. And it is showing you a person of great mental illness. And I guess it basically has two really important things to say that sound self-evident, but I guess we need to occasionally be reminded with clarity and precision, and this movie provides both of those things, that we need to pay attention and be willing to observe, notice, and help people who are in distress inside their own minds. And two, we need to not necessarily have guns circulating in society free enough for disturbed people to be able to access them. And as I say, those two things might sound self-evident and obvious, but they weren't, and they haven't been in all sorts of places. And this movie is simply adding those two things together. So it is a very, very, very somber and sad, but precise, and as I say, unsensational portrait of someone with a debilitating, deteriorating mental illness. Now, other things happened in that person's life that contributed to them, including events that enabled them to be self-sufficient enough to walk away from their parents, and thus they were no longer being checked, being taken their medication, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's all about, I suppose, mental illness, really. The crime is not shown. In fact, there is no on-screen violence. This is a sad, cautionary drama. The performances are exceptional. Caleb Landry-Jones plays the shooter, and he did win the Best Actor Award at Cannes, and rightly so. I believe he is exceptional. It's the best performance I've seen this year. It's incredible. And I think it sets a new standard for the portrayal of mental illness on screen. We've been getting better and better and better and better and better in acting and in drama at portraying mental illness. And I think this is really a new benchmark. Judy Davis as the mother and Anthony LaPaglia as the father are both fantastic. And Essie Davis plays Helen, a woman with whom the lead character develops a very unusual and very impactful relationship. And she is very, very, very good as well. This is a sad film. It's an upsetting film, but it's also a very revealing film. I got an enormous amount out of it, and I came out a little bit changed. I came out understanding things or thinking about things with a fresh perspective. It does not sympathize with the shooter, but it seeks to understand how an event like this could happen, and I think it does so with great integrity. So it's a movie that I think is one of the best movies of the year, but I can only recommend it with reservations. And if you think it's not for you, then it probably is not for you.
Mm. Yes. I mean, there'll be people who will observe that the shooter was adjudged fit to stand trial and was sentenced accordingly. In other words, was not adjudged to be so mentally deficient that he could not be sentenced. In he is currently serving many, many life sentences as a result of that and will never be released.
I guess so. And I'm sure, you know, there will be people who perhaps will go to see the film and then take great exception to it. I'm not privy to necessarily that argument. And nor do I know, I mean, there is clearly a lot of research that's gone into this film. This is not...
In other words, does the film make a case for saying he was misunderstood and should not be in jail?
No. As I say, this film is not sympathetic to the shooter, and the film is not trying to excuse the shooter. And the film
basis
does not
that, on the basis that people who suffer from some mental issues might do these things, and therefore that's an excuse.
No. The film does not say not at all. I think what the film says is, and without blaming society and without blaming any of the individuals in this person's orbit in the years leading up to it, I think the film does say, if you see evidence of somebody spiraling, you know, take note, because I think, you know, a lot of the time with these things, in retrospect, people have been like, oh, yeah, I noticed blah, blah about this person. Do you know? I think what the film says is, you know, behavior is displayed leading up to these sort of events. Very often.
Although others might observe, well, yes, people did know about that and did try to do something and did try to help as well.
Yeah. Look, it's a complicated film and people will wish to not see it out of principle. Sure. And that is fair enough. But I believe it is very well made, and I believe it is also made with integrity. I do not believe for one second that it is being made to somehow make a buck out of it. I think it is an honest examination, an honest artistic exploration into a deeply disturbing event in our nation's psyche.
This is a clip from the film. In this clip, the mother of the shooter, played by Judy Davis, challenges his close friend, reclusive heiress, Helen, played by Essie Davis.
What exactly is going on here? Sorry, I don't know what you mean. He mows your lawn, you buy him a car. He mows it again, he moves in with you. What's next, marriage?
He needed a car.
He doesn't have a license.
I didn't know that.
Yes, well, I guess you don't know everything. Don't you have your own children?
No. I've got a husband. So which is he? A husband or a son?
It's not being shown everywhere, is it? It's in some cinemas. Is that right, CJ?
As far as I can tell, you can see it both at the big chains and on the art house circuit. I think it's actually getting a surprisingly wide release.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
But it's not a commercial release. It's not geared to make money. It's trying to do something else.
All right. Let's move on. Misha and the Wolves. This is a movie on Netflix. What's all this about?
This is a documentary, and it is one of those documentaries about the less you know, the better, so I won't give away too much at all. But suffice to say that at some point, a woman who lived in the northeast of the United States let it be known to her neighbors that the way that she spent World War II was looking for her parents as a seven-year-old girl and escaping the Nazis by living with a family of wolves, a woman named Misha. And a local publisher picked up on this story and got her to write the story of her life. And the book started to become a phenomenon. So this movie looks at the person, the people, the story itself, the creation of the book, and then everything that happened after that. It's a very, very twisty, turny story. One of those Netflix documentaries where about every 15 or 20 minutes, you're like, oh, wow, because the truth is stranger than fiction. So do not Google anything about it before you watch it. Go in as cold as possible. It uses a lot of sort of tropes about, you know, World War II, and, you know, it goes a bit heavy on showing you disturbing archival footage from there, and perhaps some of the other tropes of true crime. But it's a very, very, very interesting story. And at 90 minutes, it whizzes along. This is the kind of thing they could have spread out over four or five episodes, and I'm glad they didn't. I'm glad it's a single documentary feature film.
All right, let's hear a little from it. In this scene, we first hear from the publisher, Jane Daniel, and then Misha herself.
I was thinking this would make a fascinating book. It was the early 90s. I had a small publishing company. When I say small, I mean tiny. And I was looking around for a new project. I was the first one that came along and said, could we make this even more public? Can we take this to another level? I could probably make something big out of this. There's a market for this story because it had an amazing twist.
I remember I had just been called by a farmer who saw me stealing food from his farm. I ran away full of fear, and he ran after me. When you run for your life, you run very hard. And suddenly, I had the impression that somebody was watching me. I turn around and I see this magnificent animal. To me, it was like a huge dog. The wolf seemed alone, and I needed a companion.
Right, Misha and the Wolves. Now, there's also a movie in cinemas called Lamb. What's all this?
Yes, we've got The Wolves and the Lamb. Lamb is an interesting film. It's been on the international festival circuit, gaining quite a bit of respect and kudos. It's an Icelandic film. It's an Icelandic folk horror tale, I suppose, though it's much more of a folk tale than it is a horror. It's not really a horror film. There's nothing about it that's scary, but it's eerie. So it's about a childless farming couple somewhere in the wilds of Iceland who one day discover what they think is a bit of a miracle. They become blessed with the kind of good fortune that will ultimately challenge the fates. And so for a while, things are good, and then things start appearing to be maybe not so good. And it's all tied up with the idea of childlessness and finding sort of bounty through the farm and agriculture, and it's very folk, and it's eerily beautiful, and it's very atmospheric. And I suppose it either has you at Icelandic folk horror or it doesn't, but I had a very good 92 minutes. It's beautiful and intriguing, and I like looking at Icelandic landscapes and creepy folk animals.
All right, stars for Lamb?
3 stars for Lamb.
All right, and for Misha and the Wolves?
3 stars for Misha and the Wolves.
Okay, and the other one, you can make up your own mind, I guess.
4 stars. I'll give 4 stars to Nitra.
All right. CJ, good to talk. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.